Can I make a confession to you, Bill?
I wish you would, yes.
It's Bill and Wendy here.
Wait, let me put my collar on for the confession. Hold on a second. Hold on. Okay, go ahead. Confess.
I'm not a huge Bon Jovi fan, but when I hear this song, I have to sing along.
Sure. This is a good... I'm not either, but I'll admit, John and the boys knew what they were doing with this one.
I know, and Record Store Day, National Record Store Day is coming up this Saturday. I plan to go to Valhalla in Oak Park and buy some records, and I have saved all my records, but our next guest did not think ahead and did not save
any
of his albums. His name is Eric Spitznagel, and Eric, I love your book, Old Records Never Die.
Thank you so much, Wendy. I appreciate that.
I am definitely a music lover, and I have I'm not having a midlife crisis, and nor were you, but, you know, you could buy, like, you know, everybody says, oh, get the smoking car, find a mistress, do that kind of thing, but you were on a quest to do something different. Why don't you explain this, because I love it.
Well, I decided that I made a mistake when I got rid of my records in the 90s. I thought, hey, CDs, that's where it's at. And then, oh, MP3s, the records were just a burden. I had somewhere in the ballpark of 2,000 records, and they just were so I was living in Chicago at the time and, you know, going from apartment to apartment, and it was just a pain in the butt. So I got rid of them all, sold them for booze, money, bills, whatever. And then right around this, not much booze, I'll tell you that much. Records were not going for a lot. But Ryan, I mean, I'm in my mid-40s now, and it just, I had an interview with Questlove for one of the magazines I write for, and he was telling me about his record collection, and he's like 70,000 records. And the first record, and he was talking about it so, with so much love, the first record he ever bought for $3.16. It was a 45 of the Sugar Hill Gang's, you know, Rapper's Delight. And he's just so lovingly described that. And he said, you must have, you know, a feeling about some of your records that are important. And I was like, oh, no, I sold all of mine. And he was so horrified at that. It was like I just told him I put a pillow over my dad's face and waited for him to die in front of me.
Wait, Eric, did you also do that? Because that's terrible.
And then I murdered my father.
Yeah,
that's his next
really
book.
About, that's awful.
Eric's next book will be that.
Old records never die, but my dad does when I suffocate him. All right, go on. I'm sorry. What happened?
I went looking for these records. I wanted to find my exact records. And for some reason, it was very important that it not just be kind of similar records. It had to be like the Bon Jovi record with my first girlfriend's phone number written on it, or the Replacements' Let It Be that smelled very much like weed and then had certain scratches and certain songs that I remembered, or the Kiss Alive 2 that my brother had written hands off on the front as a threat to keep me away from the Love Gun song that we love so much. And I really needed those specific ones. I thought, like, how hard could it be? Because I sold the majority of them to certain record stores in Chicago or the suburbs. So I just go back there and I say, hey, give me all your can I audit you and figure out who bought records from you and where these went?
And how much time had passed? Because it's, you know, I'm sure they sold them because they were great records and you had thousands of them.
Yeah.
So how much time had elapsed?
20 years. About 20 years. It was like 1996 that I sold the vast majority of them, 97. So it's impossible. Very much, if you think about it logically, as everyone I talked to on this journey said, you're out of your freaking mind.
Sure,
that's
of course.
Never going to happen.
Yeah. So is there some good news?
Were there some good clues?
No, is there good news? Difficult. Did you find any of them?
I found one, which I find it so... perfect that we started the segment with Bon Jovi. I found the Bon Jovi record with my first girlfriend's phone number on it.
With
Believe
Heather G's
not,
phone number? Did you call her then when you found the record and ask her out again?
Well, I'm married, so that would have been awkward, and she's married too, so it would have been doubly awkward. But I was terrified at first because I called the number and it wouldn't be her. Or who wants to get a phone call from someone 20 years ago based on a Bon Jovi record? That's kind of creepy in many levels. Especially since at the time, I would never have been a Bon Jovi fan. And I was just pretending to like the Jove, as I called him, the Jove, so that she would go out with me.
That's so funny.
I love the Job as much as she loved the Job, although that was clearly, you know, just BS. But I ended up finding, you know, figuring out where she lives and, you know, like, could I bring out this record and show it to you? And was that your phone number? And she's like, oh, my God, it's my phone number. Where did you find this? So I found the needle in the haystack. And as for the rest of them, you know, I don't really know. You kind of have to trust your own memory of whether that – is that the exact scratch that I put in that Pixies album? I don't know. Does that – when you're bringing old punk albums to play dates with your parent friends and saying, does this album smell like weed?
it's
hard to get a real read.
Eric Spitznagel on the line with us. You got to get his book, Old Records Never Die. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco did the foreword in this book. And every record, we were just talking about this before. You said you bought Bon Jovi, weren't really a big fan of the Jove, but you wanted to impress Heather. Each and every one of those albums right. We purchased had some meaning or connection to us, and that's why I hung on to mine, and I can't believe you sold all yours, Eric.
Yeah. I know. I can't believe you held on to yours. You're my hero. You really have all your records from your youth?
Yes, they're all. And my husband had a bunch of records, too. So for a while, it was kind of a status symbol when we moved in together. We had a whole wall of records. And, you know, people would come over and go, oh, wow, check that out. Well, now they're all in the basement. But we still have them. Okay. And when Bill and I are lucky enough to have people come in the studio, I just go to our little record store in the basement, pull out a record, and then they can autograph it.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing. Holy Lord. Yeah, I miss that relationship that I had with music via records. I mean, it's one thing to have an iPod that's filled with, like, I have 4,000 songs. I rule the music world. But those records, like the way a Pixies record felt in your hands or was very different from how, like, a Billy Joel record felt. And the experience you had to take that black orb out and put it on the record player and you would sit there and listen to it and study the record itself and study the sleeve and watch it spin around. And I just, you don't have that experience anymore where you really have that intensity of focus with the music. I mean, now I feel more like a hoarder with MP3s that just get the music, get as much as possible, and I don't really pay attention to any of it. Well, it used to be that you just have these intense, intimate relationships with these records, and then the sleeves would start to, over time, it was like skin, the way they would weather and they'd get scars on them, and it was just very distinctive, and I wanted that relationship with music again. And even, you know, the impossibility of finding these records is one thing, but I want to learn how to be with music again and not have it just become like, I consumed it, I got it, it's in my brain now, and now
right.
I spit it out and I move on to the next one.
Eric, it's shocking to me that if you find this experience so romantic that you would have ever parted with these albums in the first place. That baffles me.
Well, I was an idiot.
Oh, all right. Well, then it does baffle me.
But you know, when you're in your 20s and you really think that you want to discard the past a little bit, you don't really think that clearly. I mean, I think... You know, you think to yourself, I remember thinking of myself at the time, too, like, oh, the Berlin Wall has fallen. Communism is over. America will never have another threat again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just, what you think with such clarity at one point, I mean, it never occurred to me that getting rid of these records was getting rid of something valuable. It was like, well, those jeans are too weathered. I get rid of those jeans. You know, that car ceases to work, and I can get a better car that, oh, it's got GPS in it. You know, why would I think twice about getting rid of those old automobiles?
And that makes sense.
It doesn't occur to you.
Not in your 20s, but then, you know, 45, you start thinking about, wow, my life is pretty much half over. And then that's when you get nostalgic.
Yeah.
Although you should have done it at 33 because they're albums, not 45. So you should
right.
have done this at 33.
33 and a third. Yep.
You are a great writer. Your book is so easy to read. It's really, it strikes a nerve. Old Records Never Die, One Man's Quest for His Vinyl and His Past. You've written for Men's Health Magazine. Other books, Ron Jeremy's book, The Hardest Working Man in Showbiz. How fun was that to work with him?
That was unusual to sit around with Ron Jeremy. And
isn't he the nicest?
He is.
Nicest guy in the world.
I've never met a more polite human being in my life than Ron Jeremy, the adult film star, but it's true.
Yes, and he has got some tales.
Yeah.
He's a very, very friendly fella, and he has lived a life, and, you know, he's interesting because he's one of those guys that you don't have to know anything about the adult film industry. Like, my mom knows who Ron Jeremy
yeah.
is. He's bigger than he's kind of iconic in that sense.
At the last station yeah. Wendy and I worked at, Eric, we had Ron Jeremy on as a guest. Yeah. And normally if there's a guest on and people in the office know them, maybe you get one or two people straggle down and take a picture. 11 different women and a couple of the guys from the office all came to have their picture taken with Ron Jeremy.
Oh, man. Well, he goes. That speaks to his fame. So, yeah. But he's one of those guys, though. Like, I'd hang out with him, and he's like, hey, let's, you know, at his place, like, let's jump in the jacuzzi and share some stories. No, I'm not getting in a jacuzzi with Ron Jeremy. I just am absolutely not doing that.
And his stories would beat yours, too. You know that, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, hands down. Not even, there's no contest there.
All right. Well, continued success with this book. You can pick it up at Amazon, or you can go to recordsneverdie.com. How'd you hook up with Jeff Tweedy of Wilco fame to write the foreword for this?
Well, I'd known his wife from back in the day in Chicago, and I'd done a couple of stories about his son, Spencer, and for The Believer magazine and other places, and then just through friends and kind of got to know him a little bit and told him about the record and said, hey, would you, not the record, told him about the book and, you know, what do you think about it? And he's like, you're nuts. That's never going to happen. But he thought it was interesting enough that he offered to do the intro, which is a huge deal. So, and now I'm helping him with his book, which is going to be fun.
Old MP3s Never Die. Is that what his book is going to be called?
It could be. Could be. We don't know yet, but we'll find out soon enough. But I don't know. Old MP3s just disappear into the void.
And you can't touch them and hold them and clean weed on them. I mean, that's what I don't like about the MP3s. Although someone has texted us and said, that's the problem with albums. You couldn't hide your weed in it. A cassette case worked much better.
That is true. Although I did hide my weed in my replacement's Let It Be, because I thought I was being so clever because my parents would never think to look there, because clearly the replacements were all about booze, so why would my mom look for weed?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the thing, like, why would my mom possibly study the drug aesthetics of all of these artists? Like, oh, she's going to look at the Bob Marley record, obviously.
Yeah,
the
good
Grateful
good call.
Dead. She's got to look at yeah, no, that's not so smart.
Eric, thanks so much. It was fun talking to you. And again, the book is called Old Records Never Die. It's available wherever books about records that never die are sold. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Wendy. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And it's recordsneverdie.com. It's really good. I'm only halfway through it, but so don't tell me how it ends.
I won't say anything.
All right.
A quick break. More show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.